Get a head start on 2025 with CNBC's Big January, the hottest tech event, CES, from Las Vegas. The data, the numbers, the jobs report, and meet the future of biotech and pharma at JPM Healthcare. Check out the Amex Golf Tournament from California, Inauguration Day, and the meeting of world leaders in Davos. Plus, the first Fed decision of the year. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
You know, Jordan Foote does a lot of things. He's the deputy editor of Chiefs on SI.com. He, at one point, was a legend in the College Football 25 space. Now, and perhaps in a bit of a gap here. Uh-oh, now not on the phone, it sounds like.
I will call him back.
We'll get to that. Well, my whole ramp-up for Jordan really needed the end of it, so instead I'll just pretend that didn't happen. 3, 2, and 1. I'm not Cody or Gold, by the way. I am, in fact, Joshua Briscoe. Drew Nixon on the other side of the glass here on Cody and Gold, just carrying the weight for him here as everybody takes some time to rest their starters in Kansas City. So I don't know if I'm the Carson Wentz or the Chris Oladokun or the Carson Steele. I'm definitely a Carson, I think, at this point. I wonder who that makes Drew then, because maybe you're just Andy Reid. Like, you're just over there calling the shots with the headset on, regardless of what talent you're running out there. Maybe this is Drew's main argument for being producer of the year. I know you haven't gotten it yet, but it's been a long time. I know there's some producers in Minnesota that have been doing a really good job.
I'll humbly say that I don't think I'd be deserving of that award.
I think you are. Listen, I don't know if you're the Andy Reid of this show. Maybe you're the Zach Taylor. I don't know. I don't want your job to be in danger though. That feels unnecessary.
Thank you for that.
I'll work on something better. I'll take Carson Wentz, but I get my main target. Travis Kelce still playing as Jordan Foote joins us now. Again, you can read his work on ChiefsOnSI.com. And most importantly, he is our resident Los Angeles Rams fan, the red hot Rams. Jordan, it's playoff time, baby. I'm in Rams house.
Starting 1-4. On the season and locking up the NFC West. Granted, San Fran hasn't been as good as people thought. The Cardinals kind of started warm and cooled off, and the Seahawks. But still, to start off that poorly, dig yourself out of the hole and lock up the division with a week to go. Old man Matthew Stafford definitely needs the rest. And I think that we're going to see quite a bit of rest in week 18 for teams, you know, bi-coastal and then here in Kansas City, or I guess Denver, as they head to Mile High this weekend as well.
It really is a shocking number of Z's and X's and Y's and E's on the standings page, where pretty much the entire league is nearly locked up all the way to the seed number. But the thing that I started with today is the big picture rust thing. I'm just not at all worried about 2 or 2.5 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever it is, of rest being worse than just one. Everybody talks about the first round bye being a great thing, but somehow setting Travis Kelce or Patrick Mahomes or the offensive line or anybody who's banged up, which is everybody, in week 18, like there's some concern that they're going to come out rusty. Do you have a baseline level of concern or lack thereof regarding what the Chiefs might look like if none of the top 25 players or so really suit up on Sunday?
Yeah, I think it's a lack thereof situation. And we've talked about this a little bit. The Chiefs, it's going to be a very interesting, almost unprecedented level of rest they're getting, where you played the early game for the week. You're not playing most of your high-profile key guys the next week. Then you also aren't playing week one of the playoffs or weekend number one. But on the other hand, if any team has earned the benefit of the doubt of having been there before, having had the grueling playoff runs, having the championship DNA, the culture, the coaching staff, the trust of preparation, all the stuff that is somewhat intangible but does matter for a playoff run, it's the Chiefs. So they're all professionals. The coaching staff is going to have them prepared. So maybe they come out and the first drive, they're a little bit rusty on either side. And again, when you're playing good teams, that can make the difference. But if the Chiefs get upset by somebody in the divisional round at home, the list of reasons why is going to contain a lot more things than at the top three, top four, even the top five. Hey, they had too much rest and they were too groggy, too unprepared. We're not going to be able to use that to blame them, you know, coming out flat in a key playoff game.
I think that's a great point, because you also using the word groggy is perfect, because I keep looking over to the whiteboard that we have in here where I can see all of the results. And you know, the Chiefs had a strong first 5 weeks against all like good teams, or at least teams who started hot like the Saints. Then they get the bye week and they come out and they handle business against the Niners. And there's a couple of closer games. They go to overtime against Tampa. But looking back on that stretch, it also looks pretty okay. But then you have the Broncos game right before you lose to the Bills. That was a game you get amped up for, but the Chiefs fall short, you know, the one loss in the last year. And then after that, it's close to the Panthers. It's really close to the Raiders. It's really close with the Chargers again. That's the time the Chiefs have looked groggy to me. They've looked stiff and tired and burnout. We talk all the time about them getting everybody else's best effort and the early bye and three games in 11 days. To me, I just think if you could give me an entire week of just, hey, Travis Kelce, go spend a week in the sauna. Like, really, even removing some of the mental preparation and the physical work that will still be getting done at practice, I would still take that option over continuing to keep your foot on the gas. And there was an interesting text that came in here recently that said their only worry isn't really rust. It's interruption right at the time that the Chiefs have looked their hottest. That's kind of interesting, but I don't think there's any reason to believe it won't carry over. Hollywood Brown's still going to be out there. The left tackle situation will still be better than what it was the weeks before. I just think this is like a perfect situation for the Chiefs, and I'm starting to feel like a little bit crazy trying to argue that it's not secretly bad, much less the fact that I think it is incredibly good for them.
Yeah, and I think two things can be true here. The Chiefs have looked really good over the last 3 weeks, even especially on defense, and with Hollywood coming back on offense, both sides of the ball have complemented each other pretty well. They also didn't play tremendous offenses, and Cleveland speaks for itself with Jameis ultimately getting benched for DTR after that game. Houston has been kind of the middle of the pack offense, and I think Pittsburgh has gotten exposed a little bit over the past few weeks. So we can say and contextualize the defense looking better, fourth in EPA per play, fourth in dropback EPA per play over that stretch, after they were, 27th or 28th in both of those for weeks 8 through 14 without Jalen Watson. Huge caveat to all of that, they're also technically peaking at the right time. And I think, like you said, getting Hollywood Brown back, getting Travis Kelce a little bit of rest, getting a bye week so, you know, Jalen Watson can post another workout video and hype up Chiefs Twitter and all that good stuff. There's only upside to that. I don't think that they're going to come out and Hollywood's going to miss 5 or 6 plays with Mahomes and it's going to swing the difference, or Joe Tooney / DJ Humphries is going to be the reason that one of them looks rusty. Like, I think that we're kind of blowing it out of proportion almost, and anytime you can get rest as a team like the Chiefs that has either injured players like Chris Jones or the veteran players that are aging a little bit like Travis Kelce, or on defense trying to fit these pieces together, more practice time but also more rest time. And I think that the cost-benefit analysis of that definitely leans almost all positive.
Talking to Jordan Foote of Chiefs on SI.com. Of some of those things you mentioned there in these last, let's call it these last three games, what do you think is the most important development that you think is legitimate? Is it something in the secondary? Is it the pass rush? Is it Hollywood Brown reopening some things for the offense? Xavier Worthy, left tackle, Patrick Mahomes? Where would you say this is a really big deal and you would bet on it continuing to look as good as it has the last few weeks as the playoffs go on?
Yeah, I think it's the duo of getting Hollywood back in the lineup, or just in the lineup period, after he hadn't played since mid-August, and Xavier Worthy also playing his best football. And I don't think those two things are mutually exclusive. But Hollywood being the speed threat that can, you know, do damage at all levels of the field, but can also beat man. And the ripple effect he has of, you're not having to put Justin Watson on the field as much, you're not having to force Xavier Worthy to play the Hollywood Brown role, then Worthy also just becoming better at timing his routes, the depth of his routes, tracking the ball, keeping his feet in bounds, both of those players making a difference. It's helped Patrick Mahomes get the ball out quicker, which has helped the left tackle position, which has helped Travis Kelce, which I think is going to help DeAndre Hopkins come playoff time. It's allowed Justin Watson to dial back the role and look more effective, especially on Christmas Day. And even Juju Smith-Schuster can make his one or two catches a game, not be expected to do more. So it's kind of a palate cleanser for the entire offense, and a foundational thing to get Hollywood back for two games, I think, was huge after we didn't really know for a long time he was going to be back, if at all. So that helps. And I think that while Worthy has definitely improved standalone by himself, getting Hollywood back has had a domino effect in a pretty good way on the entire offense.
It obviously doesn't really matter. They're 15-1 and they're going into the bye and all of that. But it does make me wonder what this offense would have looked like all year, because I think you would have gotten that little safety blanket for Xavier Worthy because you'd have Hollywood doing all those Hollywood things. And the offense looks it looks comfortable with Hollywood now, as mm-hmm. you mentioned, like just getting this late season return. I don't know how much of it does go back to training camp or whatever, but we know that he had a full training camp and then it all broke bad. It feels like there is a legitimate comfort and chemistry that I was a little bit afraid we weren't going to see. And now I have no interest in Hollywood being out there on Sunday or anything like that. I just want to see more of them at near full strength. And that's obviously all without Rashee Rice.
100%. And we discussed right before the season, or even a few weeks in, we both had kind of, and I guess in retrospect, it's a flaming hot take, but a warm take at the time. Hollywood could potentially have a couple more receiving yards than even Rashee Rice. And then Rice came out early in the year without Hollywood and just absolutely dominated the target share and the reps. So not sure that definitely would have happened, but the hierarchy would have been those two. And you look at Xavier Worthy's numbers, he's at, 638 yards, 6 touchdowns. He should probably have another, let's say, conservatively 200 yards and 3 more touchdowns based on what he's had this year. So I think that his rookie season, following that Rice development plan of getting a little bit more put on his plate every week, the game slowing down a little bit more, 4 more receptions dating back to that Bills game, which is kind of what Matt Nagy and Patrick Mahomes have brought up as the quote-unquote turning point for his season. And you have a top 3 of him, Hollywood and Hopkins in whatever order you want. I think with playoff Kelsey, with playoff Mahomes and the ankle being healthy, your left tackle position getting somewhat figured out, if not all the way figured out, the Chiefs offense is going to be scary. And then you just hope that the defense, which has not always been the case, but also has been the hope for a lot of people, that side of the ball can slow down a Josh Allen, a Lamar Jackson, or whatever seed they play in the divisional round before that.
I want to read a couple of texts here that came through just while we were talking. First text here was, will the boys go to grandma's today? And then the text shortly thereafter from the same number was, disregard, you guys are clearly not my wife. So thank you, texter. I would love to continue getting accidental texts that we have no... I was like, will the boys go to grandma's today? Well, I don't know. Is that a reference? Drew, is that a reference from Cody and Gold that I should be knowing? No,
it is not.
Just a wrong number. And I feel like we're in a place where we can receive your wrong number texts if necessary. Not a wrong number that we call Jordan Foot of ChiefsOnSI.com. You can follow him on socials at footnoted. There's an E there because it's Jordan Foot. You get it. Jordan, what are you thinking at the left tackle spot right now? What do you want to see in week 18 in terms of how those snaps, really both tackle spots if you're interested, how those snaps will be allocated, presumably protecting Carson Wentz? And then where should the Chiefs head be at left tackle going into the playoffs? Can DJ Humphries take that job back? Is it just Joe Tooney and Mike Caliendo? What's your plan for how you'd shuffle things around there?
Yeah, I think it was Kent Swanson of KC Sports Network, and I know that, you know, he's like Voldemort sometimes. You don't even want to acknowledge him.
I really don't.
All jokes aside, though, he tweeted out the ideal or optimal or what he's hoping for, what makes sense for this quarterback, his lineup, and it had Kingsley Suamataia, I believe, at right guard, and Wanya Morris at right tackle. I think I would still... And this is going to be iffy because Denver has a decent pass rush. Nick Bonito is still a pretty good player. Kingsley has already had a couple of baptisms by fire in a game. I would almost try him at a tackle position on Sunday. Now, with that said, if DJ Humphries is healthy, then you go back to the weighing the options of if he's healthy enough, do you just wait and get him 1,000% for the divisional round and then hope that 3/4 of a game or 5/6 of a game was enough for him to knock the rust off. And I think we did see in that debut, he got a little bit better in the primetime game as it went on. With that said, putting him at left tackle for the playoffs makes the most sense, and bumping Joe Tooney, as solid as he's been, back to left guard, because Mike Caliendo, as the sample size got bigger, it was not doing as great. So Caliendo going back to the bench, I think getting Tooney back at left guard for the divisional round makes sense. For week 18, kind of divvying those reps up. I think Humphreys, maybe you give him a quarter or a half and you test out the hamstring if it's 1,000% ready to go. And then you let the young guys play. Maybe you see an Ethan Driscoll sighting, a Kingsley sighting, something like that. And then the interior, you get a Norzad, a Hansen, kind of a look to the future in a low stakes environment, which after a pretty long season is probably the best way to go.
Yeah, I fully welcome it feeling like a low stakes bowl game for the Chiefs, but I think I'm with you on Humphreys. I haven't fully cracked open the entire like little book of research. I think we'll probably talk about that next segment after we're done chatting with you. But I understand where sort of the frustrated or maybe even nervous Chiefs fans are coming from. Like who have finally seen Joe Tooney at left tackle stabilize the operation. Like it hasn't led to these instant losses that Kingsley and Wanya Morris both dealt with. And I don't think I'd be willing to even get to a world where Wanya Morris gets the left tackle job back from Tooney. I think that what you've determined at this point is that you can win playoff games, and by extension, you can win a Super Bowl with Joe Tooney at left tackle. But I think that the best offensive line that they can put together is Humphreys and Tooney both on the field at the same time. I think the Chiefs showed you that they believe that because they signed Humphreys well before they tried to make that move that just slapped Tooney as a Band-Aid over there. So I am, I don't know, man. I'm conflicted. I understand why people are conflicted, but I really do want to see Humphreys out there on Sunday. If he can't go, then I don't know that you throw him back out there to make his second Chiefs debut in the divisional round of the playoffs. That would freak me out a little bit, but hopefully he's ready to take, like you said, at least a quarter or half of those reps on Sunday.
Yeah, I think also with him, the Chiefs have shown, and this is definitely not the ideal plan, but they've shown that they are willing to be flexible during a game. Like if they got to, let's say, the divisional round after the bye, and Joe Tooney is just getting his lunch money taken by whoever, let's say it's, you know, Hunter or Anderson from Houston or Watt if he goes to the other side, which doesn't seem to happen too often, whoever's in Pittsburgh or whatever matchup they have, they can always make a switch. Now, that's not ideal for a playoff game. You really would prefer to go in with your most confident option and keep that going. But whether it's Kingsley, whether it's Wanya, or even Humphreys, by injury, by choice, by wanting to prioritize development, they have shown multiple reasons to make in-game or quick adjustments to that. So that plan's always solid. And I did want to bring up one very, very minor thing. Creed Humphrey, I think, is going to start the game at center just to keep that streak going. And that's something that I forgot about until this morning. But I would definitely assume, kind of like the might have been week 18 of last year, he gets one or two snaps and then gets pulled off to the side for someone else.
Yep. I think that makes sense. And I think Tooney was one of those guys before the pec injury last year. And obviously now he doesn't have the ongoing streak that way. Looking ahead to the playoff situation that, again, is largely settled, but not entirely. Do you, from the Chiefs' perspective, do you care who the last team in is? Is there a hierarchy? And there's a little bit of buzz now. Is the Bengals stay alive? The Chiefs have some history with Cincy, but I saw like there was the tweet yesterday or a couple days ago that was something like, you know, the Bengals have been the biggest thorn in the Chiefs' side over the last half decade, which I guess is true because there's not any other real candidates for anyone who has beaten the Chiefs in the playoffs in the last half decade that could like claim that the way that the Bengals can. But it's also a very different team and a very different defense. Where are you at in terms of that last AFC spot and where the Chiefs should be in terms of potential divisional round opponents?
I think Cincinnati at the seventh seed has the best chance of knocking off the Buffalo Bills in the first round in that 2-7. So from that perspective, you'd be amped, obviously, to get Buffalo out of the playoffs, who I think is the biggest non-Chiefs contender in the AFC. The flip side of that is the thing with Cincinnati has always been, okay, if they get in, if they play the Chiefs, then we view them differently. Like, straight up, if they're playing any other team in the AFC, I just don't think that highly of the Bengals, because their defense is pretty bad this year. The offense is a little bit streaky. So if they play the Chiefs, we suddenly have a lot more respect for the Bengals. But if they're playing Buffalo in the 2-7, I still view them higher than, let's say, in Denver or Miami. But still, I would pick Buffalo pretty heavily in that matchup. So you're looking at who the Chiefs would get in round two. Let's say 2-7 wins and 3-6, which I believe is currently Baltimore and L.A. That happens. The Ravens win. The Chiefs would get the 4-5 winner of Texans, Steelers, two teams that they've beat pretty recently, and two teams that I don't think are built for playoff success on the offensive side of the ball. So I think chalk right now doesn't do the Chiefs any disservice. They get a pretty favorable home divisional round matchup. And then with presumably Buffalo and Baltimore playing in that second round, you're also getting one of those teams knocked off. So it kind of falls pretty well for the Chiefs to only have to face one of the two non-Kansas City biggest foes. And the way it's set up right now looks pretty favorable for that to happen, regardless of who that seventh seed is going to be.
Last big picture thing here. The guys were talking about it this morning, and I think there's something to it. But you do a good job of sort of acknowledging the local perspective, the national, and maybe taking a little bit of the rooting interest out. But where are you in kind of the grand overarching value of a Coach of the Year award? Because Andy Reid hasn't won it since 2002. He's won three Super Bowls in a window that he's never been the Coach of the Year. He could complete a three-peat at the helm of this team. Obviously, Mahomes is not high in the MVP discussion. Understandable the way that his season's gone. But if there was an award for the best head coach quarterback combo, I think the Chiefs would have won it 5 or 6 years running at this point. I feel like this would be a time to go ahead and give that hat tip to Andy Reid, because they have hit a new high watermark record-wise. They have overcome injuries. They've changed a lot in terms of pass catchers over the last couple of years. Kevin O'Connell, also certainly a very deserving nominee. But for him, it feels like it's like, well, yeah, but he's doing it with Sam Darnold. Like, he's doing it with an anvil around his ankle. And I don't know how to properly give out that award, because I understand how it typically goes to the guy who's overachieving, but I might argue that Andy Reid has overachieved this year. He's certainly overachieved over the last three.
Yeah, the narrative kind of reminds me a very, very small bit of MVP, where it's, okay, is this the best player in the sport award, or is it the this guy had the best season and has a narrative on his side and... That's kind of the thing here. Andy Reid is the best coach in the NFL. If that was what got you the Coach of the Year award, this guy would have quite a few of them, specifically in the last several years. But also the narrative shift from, okay, Patrick Mahomes has not been himself. The Chiefs' defense has been up and down. They've gotten lucky. They've had injuries, all that stuff. This team isn't that good. Now when Coach of the Year conversations come up, oh, it's the Chiefs. They have Patrick Mahomes. Like, they have Steve Spagnuolo's 2023 defense that was top five in the NFL. It's not all Andy Reid. This team was expected to be here, preseason favorites, all that stuff. It's kind of hard to have the nuanced conversation, I think, with a lot of people. And as a resident Sam Darnold, I don't want to say hater, but non-believer, I think that I personally would definitely go with Kevin O'Connell. And Dan Campbell, the story there with a good but not great quarterback, I think deserves some merit, especially with all the injuries he had. But I was looking at the odds late last night, and I think the top three was O'Connell, Campbell, Reed in that order. And if I had a ballot, I would probably go for that. With all that said, not discounting Reed, I do think he's the best coach in the NFL. I think that if we framed the award a little bit differently, it'd be his, and he'd have several of them running. But that's just the harsh reality of where, you know, discourse is, and the Chiefs being not the popular flavor of the month or the year. People are ready for the next upstart head coach and team to get that award.
Jordan Foote, ChiefsOnSI.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Footnoted, on Blue Sky at Footnoted. Everything else. Jordan, appreciate it as always. Enjoy the Carson Wentz season that we will celebrate together, and we'll catch up again sometime in the playoff run.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot.
and enjoy the Rams Super Bowl run. I should have mentioned that as well. Jordan Foote, ChiefsOnSI.com, at footnoted on socials. We'll take a timeout here in Cody and Gold. I'm not Cody or Gold. I'm Joshua Briscoe, filling in for the fellas. On the other side of the break, we'll come up with our Chiefs Red half hour. We're going to talk a little more about left tackle. I think I'm going to probably make a few people a little bit mad, but I don't think you should be. Stick around and find out.
Come in to the Chiefs Red half hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
It's a Chiefs Red half hour here on Cody and Gold, 96.5, The Fan. It's really a very Chiefy 4 hours, and I am neither Cody nor Gold. Joshua Briscoe in here. Drew Nixon, the other side of the glass, making sure that I do the thing I need to do to make this radio program keep rolling. Thank you, Drew. Let's talk about somebody who has done a lot to keep the Chiefs rolling over these last few games, but who I think maybe we've lost a little bit of the calibration on. And I want to go through the thought exercise, even though I have a pretty good guess how the text line is going to come back. If the, you know, Twitter mentions, Blue Sky ats, and YouTube comments, if all of that is any indicator, I think this is a little bit of a hot button issue in terms of, you know, on the scale of the 15-1 one seed AFC first round bye holding Kansas City Chiefs. But left tackle obviously has been a problem since the second game of the season at absolute minimum. I don't know if Kingsley in week one, I don't remember that baptism as much as I remember the one that happened in week two at the hands of Trey Hendrickson. The Chiefs have been going through this left tackle carousel all year long. And I think the order of the ways they've gotten to each of these answers, I think, is telling. But what you've gotten as of late is that Joe Tooney got that left tackle spot after Wanya Morris was essentially yanked for DJ Humphreys. They bring in DJ Humphreys to take over that spot. He gets you through most of that game and then exits with a hamstring. So now DJ Humphreys has been out ever since, and Joe Tooney has held on to the left tackle job, and he's played pretty well. There was a tweet going around about, like, Joe Tooney has the highest PFF grade amongst any left tackles in the last 3 weeks. And that's not true. It's just an untrue post. Inaccurate. But I think the entire conversation has to start with a blanket of appreciation to toss over Joe Tooney, because he's done something extremely important for this offense since he's been at left tackle. He deserves a ton of credit for being a guard who can play tackle and can do it at a high level. And he's proven that they can win games and run the offense with him at left tackle. That's enormous. That is absolutely incredibly valuable, because the Chiefs told you in week two, we do not think that Kingsley Suamataia can right now, or really is going to become, a guy who we can win playoff games with him at left tackle in his rookie season. With Wanya Morris, they eventually said, we don't think we can do this consistently. There were too many similar issues. Playing through the knee issue is one thing. The technique stuff against the Raiders, hard to watch. So they bring in DJ Humphreys, give him like the rest of the salary cap space they have, essentially. He gets hurt. Tooney holds the job in the meantime. So it's huge what Joe Tooney has done successfully to this point, but the Chiefs have shown you that this was not plan A, that was Kingsley, plan B, Wanya Morris, plan C, DJ Humphreys. This might be plan D, having Joe Tooney at left tackle and Mike Caliendo at left guard. There are a couple of things that I think can add to this overall conversation that might help contextualize what Tooney has done so far. Pro Football Focus is not a biblical source to me. I'm not arguing that it's entirely beyond reproach. I'm going to give you a couple of different sources here to build this all up. So before you text in about how PFF is, you know, nonsense, faux science or whatever, just I'm going to set it up from a couple angles. But Joe Tooney against the Steelers in a game that I thought he played pretty well. Now, what the Chiefs did in that game is another thing. He got a 58.1 grade from PFF. That's the second worst overall grade of the season, which is only better than his first start at left tackle, week 15 against the Browns. He got a 68 in his second week as a starter against the Texans, which is closer to his usual standard there. But over his three games at left tackle, Joe Tooney has about a 58 grade from PFF, allowing 14 pressures on 128 real pass rush snaps. Meanwhile, Caliendo has been the lowest graded left guard in football over the last 3 weeks and the second lowest graded guard in football, according to PFF, since he's been in the starting lineup. Seth Kaiser in the Chief of the North newsletter did a film review. So that's PFF and their numbers, right? In the newsletter, Seth goes through and charts Caliendo and Tooney's reps from the Texans game, and talking after the Steelers game, he didn't have anything that changed holistically from game two there. So from Seth's read, he said Tooney was okay at left tackle against Houston, but, quote, not great or even good, with a particular weakness to power rushes. Seth also has made the point that Tooney has been getting more help either from Chips on the outside or from Caliendo on the inside. He's been getting more help in kind of evening out his job at left tackle in a way that was not being given to Kingsley or Wanya Morris. I don't think that's a coaching mistake necessarily, but I think it's telling. Kingsley and Wanya were both out there to prove that they could eventually be this team's left tackle. The way that they've treated Tooney and the time to throw that I'll bring back in here in a second, the time to throw that Mahomes had against the Steelers on Christmas was so low, not that he only had so much time, but that he was getting the ball out quickly and proactively, which is a good thing, and multifaceted. But the Chiefs have been operating like they are bandaging the left tackle spot with Tooney, not like they're just running the standard offense the way they would with their top choice at left tackle. All of that going to say, we'll hear from Andy Reid in about 15 minutes, and we'll see if we end up hearing anything at left tackle. I'm guessing we'll get a little bit of a hint about week 18, but probably not the whole game plan. I think they're going to try to see DJ Humphreys at left tackle against Denver, which I think is an objectively good idea. Get him those reps, even if he's your backup. But if he looks good against the Broncos on Sunday, I think there's a really, really, really good chance we get one more bye week for Humphreys to get his body right again. And then it's Humphreys, Tooney, Creed, Trey Smith, and Juwan Taylor for the divisional round of the playoffs. That's what I'm expecting. That's why I think it comes together that way. Tooney's been very, very helpful, but maybe just being a tiny bit over-evaluated because of the expectations of him being out there, the way the Chiefs have protected him, and how much better the offense has looked altogether. So, Drew, tell me if I'm crazy. I think most people are looking at Joe Tooney at left tackle and saying, hey, that's working better. Don't tinker with it unnecessarily. Where do you stand?
I think that's what I would say, just because, not along the lines of don't fix something that's not broke, because technically the fact that they are in the position they are by having to play Tooney at left tackle, they're broken in a way where obviously you mentioned A, B, C plans haven't gone your way, so you have to resort to plan D in that respect. But I think you're right, though, and give DJ Humphreys, you know, the shot, see what he looks like, and even if he... I guess in my mind, I'll have a question for you too. If he gives you a C-plus game where, yeah, you know, there's moments, maybe he gets better as the game goes along, like in the first game that he played, but he doesn't give you a full, well-rounded performance. Is that enough for you to say, you know what, we're going to go with DJ and put Tooney at his original spot, or we're just going to stick with Tooney? Because again, look at what the offense has done in the last 2 weeks. 27, 29... In particular, you're talking about two playoff teams, and the Steelers' defense is very good, so that was maybe the best performance they had all season on Christmas. They looked wired to go, and they were ready, and they didn't slip up at all. I wonder if you just stick with Tooney because you look at what's happened the last 2 weeks, and unless DJ Humphreys gives you a no pressures allowed, no sacks allowed performance, I don't know if you change anything up.
It's a very good question, because I do think that's the gray area. So I think for me, because the Broncos obviously have something to play for here. So if Humphrey goes out there, Humphreys, I can't believe it's we're doing Humphreys and Humphrey at left tackle and center. If DJ goes at, not Derek Johnson, if DJ Humphreys goes out there against the Broncos on Sunday and has a really solid day against Nick Benito and the rest of them, I think it will become pretty easy for a lot of people to hop on the board and say, all right, you get Tooney back in his best position. Mm-hmm. That's easy. I don't know if it's easy for a lot of people, but I think it's logical. Your question's a very good one. What if he's out there? He doesn't get banged up. He stays healthy enough throughout it. You're not worried about him physically, but it's just kind of, let's say, a rusty game for him. I think his debut was a little bit rusty, and he got better as it went. Mm-hmm. If he goes out there and he is a... I'll just keep your metric. If it's like a C-plus type of game, I don't know. The good news is you get the bye week and you get a chance to review why it went poorly. Mm. I think it's the same thing that Tooney is doing a good job at avoiding right now. Are you losing against good players and dying a slow death? Or are you getting immediately beaten in a way that blows up the play? And I think if Humphreys is losing in a way on Sunday, that is tanking plays before Carson Wentz has a chance to set his back foot, then I don't think that's a guy you can play in the playoffs. And I don't think that's a guy, I don't think that's something that you can expect to get better with one more week of practice.
Agreed. Well, which is why you don't, like to your point, you don't move Tooney to left guard for Wanya Morris to be the left tackle either.
Right. Because
he was having plays blown up within half a second.
Yes, and that because to me, that's the cardinal sin that the Chiefs have been willing to pull out the big vaudevillian cane and yank you off stage. Kingsley started losing fast. Wanya Morris started losing fast. Joe Tooney, and you may have already seen or heard this stat from Mike Sando on Christmas. Mike Sando of The Athletic tweeted, Mahomes' 2.34 average time to throw versus the Steelers was the fastest of his career, according to True Media. The fastest time to throw of his career. What Joe Tooney never did, to my memory, Joe Tooney never lost a rep that was so instantaneous that Mahomes didn't have a chance. Now, sometimes that was because Travis Kelce was given a little shove and trying to reset the balance of the defender before escaping back out into a route. Sometimes it was because Caliendo was overextending to help Tooney's interior so Tooney could focus on the outside. You are relying on other guys on your line. By the way, also a little side note, I know Juwan Taylor, penalty issues, that's an ongoing thing. We're all pretty aware of that. Good day against T.J. Watt.
Didn't hear his name come up, that being T.J. Watt, or I guess Juwan Taylor, which is a good thing for an offensive lineman. Didn't hear his name come up really at all whatsoever.
The one that I remember was when T.J. Watt fell and then held on to Juwan Taylor as he went down and drew a flag there. I'm sure T.J. Watt gets held all the time and doesn't get the calls, but that one was pretty soft. That was not a Juwan Taylor alignment penalty, you know, where it's like, man, yeah. Please just like think about it for 1 second. All of that being said, one of the things with the time to throw that I think is obviously married with both of the tackle plays and everything is that Mahomes was getting rid of the ball very quickly, oftentimes by choice. There's a lot of RPO stuff that was just hammering the Steelers. Felt like they were never ready. They never had a correct answer for a run pass option, which is partially the nature of why you do call RPOs. You give the offense a chance to take two different paths. You got to be ready for either of them. Or show one answer and then execute a different one. But the Chiefs were moving quickly in their offense, but it felt like it was in rhythm. It wasn't insanely hurried. It wasn't terribly rushed, which I think has been that's the downside of this super low time to throw. And so like a couple of texts here. Someone says, Mahomes is the most comfortable with Tooney at left tackle. I wouldn't mess with it until you have to mess with it. I understand that entirely. I don't know where the Mahomes comfort level thing actually settles in, because I think Mahomes was more comfortable with the game plan that they've had with Tooney. Again, giving him a little extra help over there, understandably, because he is a guard playing tackle and he's been playing it at a pretty high level. But I think he's comfortable with the game plan there. And then again, specifically against the Steelers, when everything is moving as quickly as it is for, I think, game plan reasons by and large. And it means he's got a full array of receivers. His pass catchers are back. And so they're getting open, so he has a place to go with the football instead of constantly having to survey for 3 seconds, bail out, and then try to make something magical happen. It's fun when Mahomes does that, but it's cool when he doesn't have to do that. I don't know about the comfort of it all. I think Patrick Mahomes would love for DJ Humphreys to be out there and to give him any reason to become comfortable with him, because now the Chiefs can do a little bit more of their five out route combos. That Travis Kelce doesn't have to be there to give an extra little chip because they're putting him on an island. Alternatively, maybe the Chiefs are going to see this as being a little bit of a revisiting of how they do treat their tackles who need some help, because especially 2 weeks into his NFL career, you could have given Kingsley a little bit more help in those games. They didn't. Again, I think they're acknowledging this as a bandage. So, and then again, Taylor with the penalties, he at least two of those were like real judgment calls. The false starts and the alignment things, that is frustrating because those become very stressful. And then also a texter that says they run between the tackles better with Tooney at guard. I think there's absolutely truth to that as well. And then a question about Juwan Taylor saying, was TJ Watt playing with a hurt ankle or did Taylor play that well? If you play him again, it's a totally different Watt. That's partially true.
It might be a mix of both, I think.
But Juwan Taylor was playing through an issue, a hamstring of his own. So I think that is at this state of the season. This goes back to how we opened the show. Mm. Give me 2 weeks off. Give Juwan Taylor 2 weeks to not be a banged up 17, or I guess now 16 game starter for this team when all of your offensive linemen are all playing through everything. All of your defensive linemen are all playing through something. The Chiefs are going to be significantly healthier by that point. Watt will be weeks removed from the injury healthier, barring something else, because they're still playing games they need to win. But the Chiefs are going to be the team that is rejuvenated health-wise, while TJ Watt will be coming off another playoff game if they do meet up with the Chiefs.
Well, and
again,
are we sure that he's not going to play against the Bengals this weekend?
No, I'm not sure.
Because I think that's another thing too.
It's a good question.
He's really not going to have any rest, essentially, unless they rest the starters for whatever reason. But I think that there's still seeding potentially up for grabs, right? I believe there is, where they could fall back to six, I think.
Yeah,
the Chargers could go up to five.
There's a little shuffling there, and that whole Saturday, the AFC North Saturday, is a little bit a little odd. And I honestly, once I saw that the Chiefs were free and that I wasn't going to have to reschedule my Saturday plans, that was the win that I needed yesterday. And I'm taking my victory lap on that one. There's also a text here asking about if Kingsley and Wanya Morris could be a future right tackle. Wanya looked good over there, again, in very briefly for Juwan Taylor a couple of weeks ago. But I don't know. The Andy Reid and Andy Heck both continue to kind of project a little bit of optimism regarding those guys. And I'll tell you this, months ahead of this conversation, I don't think drafting a tackle at 30 or 32 or whatever, I don't think that's going to solve the problem as instantly as people would like to believe. Kingsley was a conversation at the end of the first round. And so I might have a little more hope regarding Kingsley and Wanya long-term than most. But right now, I'm the one holding out hope for DJ Humphreys to come back and make a good performance in Week 18 before maybe giving the Chiefs their best front five for the first time this season come the divisional playoff round. We'll keep an eye on it. We'll continue discussing it as we go. I'm Josh Abrisco, across the glass from Drew, as he holds together a Cody and Gold free edition of Cody and Gold. Good news, if you just miss Cody and Gold and Andy Reid, we'll have one of those guys talking on the other side of the break. Andy Reid's noon press conference coming up next on 96.5 The Fan.